From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Throughout this election season, we've invited candidates for prominent office to join us on the talk show. When possible, we bring political opponents together to discuss and debate the issues. There will be no voice of the voter debate this time around, we're sorry to say, but we are glad to be able to sit down with candidates separately when we can on the talk show, or again, as I said, together. The plan was to sit down today with Adam Bello, the Democrat in the race for county executive in Monroe County, and to sit down on Friday with the Republican, Cheryl Donolfo. However, we were informed shortly after 11 o'clock this morning that the county executive, Cheryl Donolfo, is now declining our invitation to come on the talk show before the election. She has declined an invitation for a voice of the voter debate and won't be on Connections as well. So we're disappointed. I can assure our listeners that we have tried very hard to schedule not only a debate, but an extended conversation on the talk show with the candidates. We think public engagement is vital for voters, but the county executive feels that she can reach voters in other ways. I have no doubt schedules are very, very busy this time of year. We are not entitled to her time, and we'll have to respect that decision. And we do hope that the county executive will make time for this program in the future. The door remains open before the election, but perhaps after that. And with that, our guest this hour is the Monroe County Clerk, the Democratic candidate for Monroe County Executive. It's Adam Bello. Thanks for making the time. Welcome back to the program.
Good afternoon, Evan. It's good to be back. Thank you for having me.
And a brief hello from Randy Gorman, our news director, on this third day of our fall membership campaign. Hi, Randy.
Hi, Evan. And obviously, what we do with Connections and, of course, at WXXI News in terms of our election coverage, we'll be with you during the evening, starting when the polls close on November 5th. And there's a lot of preparation that goes into that and a lot of staff. And that's why we need support, as we do ask you just a few times during the year. You can offer that support right now at 454-6300, whatever amount, even become a sustaining member at $5 or $10 a month, whatever you can do. 454-6300 out of the area, 1-800-295-9994, 1-800-295-9994, or you can go on the WXXI mobile app or online at WXXINews.org. We hope you will continue to be a part of WXXI, or if you're not, become a new member. We'd love to see that as well. Evan?
Thank you, Randy. The reason I wanted to stress the process is the last thing I want for listeners to think is that we're favoring any campaign, party, etc. We do not, and we spend a lot of time trying to schedule with these very busy campaigns. That's why in this case, after the county executive said she preferred, or at least her campaign said she would prefer to have her own hour and not come on alongside Adam Bello, they asked us to lock down Friday at 1 p.m., so we did, and then they told us today that she's just not going to do that before the election. So that's the story there. We're not entitled to your time either, Adam Bello, but we're glad that you're here. Thanks for making the time for us.
I'm happy to give you my time. Thank you, Evan.
Well, yeah. And you have done forums publicly with the county executive, there's going to be one televised debate. I should be clear to listeners. We were disappointed not to have a voice of the voter debate, and as far as I can remember, living and working in Rochester, there have been voice of the voter debates in the county executive elections. There will not be this time around. There will be one televised debate on Channel 10 only. And so, again, we were disappointed about that. But, that's as far as I can say.
Yeah, and I think there was also an invitation to participate in a League of Women Voters debate as well. And I know we were both scheduled to participate in a forum, I think separately, but a forum over at Channel 8 this week as well. And I understand that she's declined that invitation as well. So.
Well, that is up to her. And yep. So let me just start with this question on where the election stands now. 13 days to the election.
That's right.
Elections often boil down to there's a lot of things that animate voters, but there's usually one or two major themes that drive a community of voters. What do you think this election is ultimately about?
See, I think this election is really is about the future of Monroe County. And what do we want to look like or be 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now? And the fact that we have largely been stuck relative to other like-sized cities and peer communities across the country. Our population has been relatively flat. Our GDP growth has been flat. Our job market has been relatively flat. And I think that, while the rest of the world is passing us by, and our elected leaders and our politicians like to tell us all these great programs they're doing, and they keep saying all these things that are happening, the reality on the ground is oftentimes far different. And I think people are just getting sick of that. And I think that's from across the country. People are looking at what's going on in Washington, D.C. It's hard to tell from one day to the next what's true and what's not. People say one thing, something else is really going on. And I think we see that down here on the local level as well. People are telling us investments that they're making or make outlandish claims about jobs that they're creating or sustaining or retaining. And we just know it's not true when we just look around and just don't see the progress that we've been promised. And so really what this campaign is about, it's about bringing people together, and it's about realizing we need some new ideas and some new energy to really move this community forward if we're going to take advantage of all the great resources and all the great people that we have here to really move forward.
Well, the county executive says her record is strong and that she and her administration have created or retained 20,000 jobs. Do you accept that figure?
No, I think that that's an odd way of looking at it. I think that when you're looking at the job creation numbers, I know they sent out a mailing a few weeks ago that I think said retained or sustained 20,000 more jobs, right? Our job market's relatively flat. If you look at the increase in private sector jobs from 3.5 years ago to today, it's a quarter of that, of what they're claiming. I think that, you know, by any measure, this community has been relatively flat. I think what they're trying to take credit for is the retention of jobs that came before the Comita board for projects or before the Comita board. And I would just, all I'd have to do is point you to projects like what happened at the Midtown Athletic Club. The Midtown Athletic Club is a high-end athletic club, certainly not accessible to most of the population here because of its monthly fee and the size of that fee.
It's about $200+ a month to join the club.
Right, and they received a $500,000 tax incentive in order to expand and grow there. But you know, they largely at the end of the meeting when they came in to receive that tax, you know, when they were interviewed by the media, the owner or general manager said, you know, we would largely probably would have done this project even without the benefit. Nobody actually went back and asked how many new jobs are tied to the expansion only related to this benefit if you didn't have the benefit. And it's just, but all those jobs that they're talking about and the jobs that were retained from that are all included in these outlandish numbers that they want to give you. But the fact of the matter is that our job market today looks pretty much like it did 3.5 years ago. And so it's not working. And, you know, you could look at, you know, even the way they tried to reform this idea. Evan, I remember one of the first appearances I had on your show when I was the county clerk, I was with Mike and Wendy Nolan, who owned iSquare, and there was a huge scandal that surrounded Comita at the time related to that development in the town of Irondequoit because they allowed politics to basically interfere with the operation and the information flow through the about that project. And the county executive had an opportunity at that point to completely reevaluate how we do economic development in Monroe County. When all those board members resigned, they could have completely reshaped how we do incentive packages to make sure that we're incentivizing new businesses coming into Monroe County. How are we looking to help people here sustain and grow their operations? And instead, they renamed it and they moved on in large part. And I think that we missed an opportunity to really dive in and see how can we make economic development really work here. And I think that we are missing the boat. And I think the business community feels the same way. I just a few weeks ago, I was very happy to have been endorsed by the Rochester Chamber of Commerce's Political Action Committee, because I think they are also seeing that we've been relatively stuck. And we keep talking about these great sounding things and we make these political announcements, but the reality on the ground is something that's very different.
Well, so if you're not buying the 20,000 jobs retained or created by the county executive, 2 years ago, Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren made the exact same case for her second term. She said 30,000 jobs created or retained. Do you think Rochester Mayor Warren was out of line with that?
Well, I think what the numbers that I'm going to trust, Evan, are what the New York State Department of Labor puts out as our job market in our community. And in Monroe County, in our region, the number of jobs that we have are relatively the same as they were. It's anemic, the job growth. And I think that we really have to start working together with the business community, with our the institutions of higher learning. We have some of the finest colleges and universities here. And we have to come up with a real strategy to grow. I do think there's no question, though, that downtown Rochester is coming alive. I work there. I'm there every day, and I can see the growth in the people that are coming downtown.
But you're buying those figures, 30,000?
Well, I've never heard that 30,000 before. So,
that's what you ran on.
Evan, but what I'll tell you this is, all I do is I look at the Department of Labor, and I could tell you this. I could tell you that it's only about 4,000 or 5,000 new private sector jobs in our area than there were 3.5 years ago.
That's fair. I hear you criticizing your Republican opponent, but not the Democratic mayor of Rochester for using the same strategy. I just want to make sure I understand why you're doing it.
And I don't know where those numbers come from. I just know what Cheryl DeNolfo has been talking about, and I'm telling you that I just think that it's trying to make people believe that we have been on this large upswing and that we've been adding, and Monroe County is responsible for those jobs. But I would also tell you, I don't think that the government creates jobs. It's just what the government's role is in creating the environment and the ecosystem for job creators to be here and to grow, and for people who are seeking employment to move into our community and be able to live here and have a quality of life that keeps them here and their families here. And I think that's what our investments should be in. So I would prefer that the county executive talk about what investments in infrastructure we're making. I like projects. I know the mayor was a big supporter of Rock the Riverway, which is a state investment that came in. And I think those are the smart kind of investments that we should be making, because that's the infrastructure that helps impact quality of life issues. Those are the kind of infrastructure that helps drive business into the city, and it helps drive that whole environment that helps sustain urban living and people moving into the downtown.
But the county executive would say, really, let's start with taxes. She's been running ads on it. She's been running her campaign saying her job, perhaps job one, is to be a stabilizer and somebody who can keep taxes down. And she's been telling people she gets it done on taxes.
Well, the fact of the matter is that the county executive last year just passed the highest property tax increase in 10 years. Under Cheryl DeNolfo's administration, the property tax levy's gone up over 7%. And, again, I think this is just another latest example of where our government leaders are telling us one thing, but we know it's something else. I don't know how you look taxpayers in the eye who you just raised their taxes and then tell them you cut them.
Raise taxes how? Explain.
Because it's through the tax levy. People don't pay a rate. People pay the levy. That's the dollar value that they're being taxed on. And your taxes are based on a combination of the tax rate and the valuation of your home, right? So when property values rise, if you don't lower the rate, the tax will rise, right? When you multiply the rate into it, the tax will rise. And so because property values have been going up, the tax rate, by definition, by what the county executive's talking about, they lowered the rate, but the amount you pay still goes up because it's not lowered by the same amount that the values rose.
But the towns do the assessments, right?
The towns do the assessment, but the county sets the rate for what the county is going to collect. So when the whole property values countywide go up and you don't lower the rate by the same amount that the property values went up, by definition, you're collecting more money.
I definitely understand that. But let's say there's not an assessment that's done in my town. So let's say I've got a $100,000 house. I'm paying, what, 889 or whatever the rate is. Mm-hmm. And the county executive and her administration announced a dime cut in the tax rate. So now it's 879. This is just hypothetically. And my town doesn't change the assessments. Well, then it is a tax cut for me. But what you're saying is most of the time these assessments they're going up. So even if the rates stay the same or go down, you could still pay more. Is that right?
Right. So even if the rate, as long as your assessment doesn't go down, as long as it's the multiplication of the assessment into the tax rate. Right. So, but the fact of the matter, the property values went up countywide. So the county's looking at the full number in whole. So by telling people, like in the town of Irondequoit, where they went through a property reassessment and their assessments went up, or you look at the town of Brighton, where their assessments went up, and it's happened across the county. I think there's a lot of people listening to this show whose property values have gone up. And because the rate didn't go down by the same amount the value went up, they're paying more in taxes.
So
that's how
that?
You got almost a $12 million tax increase.
Yeah, you're going, how could the county be collecting more tax money and yet lowering the rate? Well, that's how. What he just described is how.
Right.
But if you're the county executive, is that how you're going to do business?
When I'm the county executive, we're going to stay underneath the tax cap. And that's what I did in the town of Irondequoit. That's what we'll do in the county. But I'm not going to tell people I cut their taxes if I really raised them. That's not what we're going to do. You have an honest conversation about where you are with taxes. What they're trying to do right now is mislead people into thinking they've cut their taxes when, in fact, it was the largest property tax increase in 10 years.
Okay, but I think I want to make sure I get a yes or no so I understand here. Because our listeners have said, when you have political leaders on, make sure they give you yes or no's.
Right.
So,
sure.
Do you expect that when you analyze the budget, your goal is going to be to try to cut the rate corresponding to whatever the increase of an assessment is, so thereby someone is not paying more?
Well, I think what we're going to do...
You got to start yes or no.
Well, that's obviously the goal. Yes, but the goal is to do that is because it's the goal is always to charge people as little as possible, right? The goal is always to keep the tax burden as small as possible. There's obviously costs that are going to rise, though. When you're running a government, the costs are going to go up, right? There's healthcare costs that you're dealing with and things like that.
So you're going to do what Cheryl Donolfo's done.
But I'm not going to tell people I cut their taxes.
Okay.
That's what I'm not going to do. It's disingenuous to say I've cut your taxes when, in fact, you've actually increased them by the largest amount in 10 years.
So it's not the way she has governed with taxes. It's the communication and taking credit for tax cuts that you think
are
not there.
It's telling people one thing but doing something else.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so then let's look at what you want to do with the revenues of government, because you have been critical of the way this county has approached, for example, child care, early intervention, pre-K, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Now, I know there are conversations that have to be had with providers, and I don't know if you've got a full framework in mind for exactly what you'd want to do, but my assumption is your administration would want to spend more on those things, and I don't know where the money comes from for that.
Right. So one of the first things that we're going to do when I get there is a top to bottom forensic audit of the county finances. There's no question that that has to happen. And I think the reason why is because we get a lot of mixed messages over what's going on with the county finances. They tell us there's better budgets. They tell us that there's budget surpluses, for instance, but then they don't have enough money to invest into early intervention programs. So they don't have enough money they're failing in child protective services when it comes to protecting families in our community. They've cut health care benefits to county retirees, including law enforcement personnel who work for this county. So I think the problem is that, again, you're getting one message from them, but I think the condition is something else. So I think we have to start over with a fresh audit so we get the fresh picture. But when it comes, again, to giving services like this, so you mentioned early intervention services. So what are we going to do with them? So, again, I go back to we're saying one thing, but something else is the fact. We're talking about investments that we're making in early intervention and changing the rates. And there's a whole, it's a complicated thing what's happening here, but essentially the rates have been kept so low over such a long period of time that we're losing providers. It's no longer financially feasible for as many providers to be in the business to offer services to children like occupational therapy, speech therapy, physical therapy, things like that.
And we've got lots of kids who need these therapies.
A lot of children. And so it's become harder for providers to sustain that. And so, you know, what the long-term fix for this would be that we need to put together a coalition. And that's what I would do as a county executive, bring together providers, parents, government leaders, and build a regional coalition that goes to Albany, and we fight for more resources. We fight for an increase in the reimbursement rate on the early intervention space. We increase the reimbursement rate on the preschool programs that the county controls that reimbursement. And then we also have to hire additional service coordinators, because at the end of the day, there are children, you know, what we're hearing back from parents, and I talk to parents whose children are in early intervention all the time throughout this campaign, and they're telling me about kids who are waiting on waiting lists. And I'll tell you, Evan, when I was I am a parent. I have an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old. And before my 10-year-old went to kindergarten, he received early intervention services. He received speech therapy because he was having trouble communicating effectively with his sister, with his parents, with his family and his peers. And he was able to receive those services, and the improvement was incredible before he reached school age. And I can only think about what would have happened if he didn't receive those services and ended up in school unable to communicate effectively with his teachers and his classmates. And that's what parents are facing today, is that their children, when their child goes on a waiting list, now they're sitting and they're laying in bed at night wondering, what if my child wasn't on a waiting list and was able to start their services a month ago, 2 months ago, 3 months ago? Where would my child be now? And that's an awful thought as a parent to have to lay in bed and think about where they could have been if they had received the services and weren't on a waiting list. And I think the disingenuousness, again, of the argument coming from this administration is that we got the job done. We increased the reimbursement rate and fixed the problem, when in fact, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, there was a county legislature meeting and there were dozens of parents who came to that meeting begging for help because it's not working and that coalition doesn't exist to fight for more dollars.
If I could, let me just try to make sure I'm totally clear for listeners. I think, again, what the county executive's argument is, and I wish she would come on this program before the election to clarify, but I'm going to try to speak as best I can for where she is on this.
Sure.
I think she has said that they have tried to do what they can on the county level while putting heat on New York State to also step up and do more. And when you talk to providers, most agree that, yes, this is a problem that starts with the state. You seem to be saying that the difference between you and Cheryl Donofo going forward on this is that you will maybe communicate a little bit more with providers who have said on this program that's what they want, and they were surprised and disappointed this past spring when they felt like there was poor communication or misinformation from the county. Mm-hmm. That's what we heard from a number of providers. And you seem to be saying that you can get more from New York State. Well, we've got a bunch of Democrats in office in New York State, and you're a Democrat. Why is New York State shorting counties like this and shorting local communities on this, and what are you going to do to change your colleagues' minds?
Well, what you said is right, though. It is a lack of communication, because even when the county said there was going to be across the board 15% increase,
there wasn't.
In the counties, there wasn't.
No, we know that.
Yeah,
it's, but you can't invent money from nowhere. Where are you going to get the state money that so far they're not giving you?
That's right. So it you have to prioritize it, and you have to bring a coalition to Albany and ask for it, and you have to fight for it. And
they've asked before, though, haven't they?
We don't do that in effective way here. We don't. So what happens is, I think it was announced, it was like the last November or December, there was a county legislature meeting. When it came as a surprise, I know to a Democratic legislator who works for a state legislator, that this was one of the county's top priorities. I mean, this is not identified in an effective way as a priority for Monroe County. It just isn't. And so, I would do it in a completely different way. If I'm elected county executive, what you'll see is a real community conversation about what are our priorities. Early intervention services is one of them. And we will have a real coalition that goes to Albany and fights for those resources. And I think that's in stark contrast with what my opponent does. My opponent likes to talk a lot through press releases and does press conferences and fights people and engages in this divisive politics that we see on, you see it out of Washington, you see it all over the place. But it's not a constructive way of bringing about real change. You have to be able to work with people and partner with people. It can't just be about fighting everybody all the time. You have to be able to work with people.
All right. Adam Bello is our guest. What's the website for your campaign, by the way?
It is adambello2019.com.
Okay. We've invited Cheryl Donofo, and we had thought we had locked down Friday for an hour with the county executive, but we're informed this morning that her campaign is now declining the opportunity to come on this program either with or apart from Adam Bello before the election. They have also declined our invitation for a Voice of the Voter debate. So we're disappointed about that, but we respect their decision and we respect the county executive, and we hope we can talk to her in the near future. That door remains open. I want to do this briefly, but I do think we ought to do this here because you're one of the leaders in your party. So I'm going to ask you about the controversy surrounding outside money in the district attorney's race. I want to recap it for listeners. You've got the incumbent Republican Sandra Dorley running against Democratic challenger Shawnee Curry Mitchell. Suddenly there's a flood of outside spending, what we would call independent expenditures. And that means it's not the Curry Mitchell campaign. It's an outside funder who has very different rules. And records show they've paid more than $800,000 for ads in various forms in this race, attacking Dorley and supporting Curry Mitchell. First of all, are you comfortable with that?
Well, I will say, can I just tell you what I think about this, Evan, is that I think it's ironic that we're getting all the complaints now from Republicans about all this outside money coming in. And this is the Republican Party that has no problem with the Citizen United decision, and it has no problem with this dark money that comes into politics and campaigns.
Largely
all
speaking,
over
you're
country.
Right about that.
Right.
Your party's had more of the problems with it. So do you have a problem with this
so
one?
This is what I think. I am in favor of campaign finance reform, and I think the system needs to be reformed. But I also don't think that progressive groups need to lay down the arms and play by a different set of rules than conservative groups do. And I think there needs to be a campaign finance reform on all levels, from the federal elections right down to state. level, but I also don't think that people should lay down arms and play by two different sets of the rules. So I find it largely ironic here that it's the Republican Party that's complaining about all the, about outside money coming in when they're perfectly fine with the Citizens United decision in large part, and have set up a situation across the country where all this dark outside money is pouring into campaigns. And so I think we should do it differently.
If a big benefactor had spent $800,000 supporting the Dorley campaign, you think Democrats wouldn't be complaining?
Well, I think Democrats have been complaining about issues like money coming in. You know, I keep talking, you know, the Citizens United ruling that came down. Democrats have been complaining about this for years. And you know, that's why the system needs to be reformed, I think, on every level. But, you know, but again, like I said, I don't think that progressive groups need to play by a different set of rules than what exists. And
so you're saying try to change the game, but until those rules of the game change, you've got to play
by
the game that is on the field now?
Are being handed to you. Yeah.
Okay. And I'm going to take it as a no, then, that you don't have a problem with this expenditure in this race. Because these are the current rules.
This is the rules that they're playing under, sure.
Okay. So let me try to get some listener questions, and we've got a ton for Adam Bello. Let's do it after the break, because we're going to talk climate change, we're going to talk more economic development, and we're going to talk about parks, oversight, a lot of different things here with Adam Bello. He is in studio with us. Our goal was to bring the candidates together, and unfortunately, Cheryl Donolfo has declined that, but we've got Adam Bello, the county clerk, who is the Democrat running for Monroe County Executive. Your questions after the break. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, Jiva Theater has an explosive exploration of race with The Niceties on stage now, and we put it under the microscope. Then, in our second hour, who is college for? Who is it really affordable for? What about low-income students? What are the opportunities and the realities with college affordability? Talk with you on Thursday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. John in Fairport on the phone first with Adam Bello. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, good afternoon. Adam, I was wondering if you know the percentage of the county budget that is actually under the control of the county administrator and not mandated by the state.
Well, that's a good question, John, and I know that's something that gets talked about a lot. The county executive likes to say that 85% of the budget is mandated by New York State. But then what else ends up happening is that the county turns around and brags about the investments that they're making that are part of those 85% mandated expenses. So I think the real conversation is about recognizing that the mandates that we have and how we categorize these things, the mandates that counties have are to administer programs to impact people's lives. And how we do that is in a lot of ways up to the county. And I'll give you an example. The county clerk's budget, if you look at the county budget as a whole, the Monroe County clerk's budget is a 100% mandated budget because the county is required to have a county clerk. But how the county clerk performs its functions and where it chooses to invest, he or she chooses to invest their resources, is at the discretion then of the county clerk and the county legislature. So while we're required to have a county clerk's office, we're not required to have opened a DMV in the city of Rochester this year. That's something the county clerk chose to do. So I think it's complicated to answer your question because while a lot of the services that we provide and the programs that we offer are mandated by New York State, the way we provide those services and how we choose to impact the community with those services is not necessarily the same thing.
Well, so and
it's
Adam,
it's
the
a complicated
county,
question.
Yeah, and yeah. The county executive often says that 80 to 85% of the budget is weighed down with mandates. Is that too high a number? You think that's overblown?
Oh, I think that's way overblown, yeah, because it doesn't take into account the choices that you're making when it comes to what goes into that 85%. You know, and then I would actually just say, you know, what exposes the genuineness of that argument is the fact that I know the county executive has been talking about these great investments in children and family of over half a billion dollars. Well, Okay, but you can't on one hand complain about the 85% of your budget being mandated, but then on the other hand turn around and say, well, I'm very proud of the $500 million that we're investing in children and family. That's two different messages about the same pot of money. It's either a mandate or it's something that you're choosing to invest in and make an impact. And so I think there's this political message that we just keep getting fed about the role of county government and how we operate, instead of talking about what's the impact that we're really having in the community, right? Why aren't we moving the needle on poverty in any significant way in this community? Why aren't we moving the needle on jobs and economic development in any significant way? Why aren't we moving the needle when it comes to child protective services in any significant way? And I think it's because we keep getting these political messages that sometimes are conflicting with each other about what the role of county government really is and what it is that we're really doing.
Increasingly, we're seeing local governments address climate change in various ways. So if you can be specific here, would a Bellow administration be different when it comes to climate than the DeNolfo administration's been?
Yeah, I think we would be very different in this space. I think that it has to start with the acknowledgement that climate change is real and that we have a responsibility to think globally and act locally. I'm the parent of two small kids. Like I told you, Evan, I have an 8 and a 10-year-old, and they're more forward-thinking about this than a lot of our government leaders are, because they're thinking about their future and the condition of the world that we're leaving behind for them. And, you know, and it's interesting to see how the government has fallen behind. I was at a climate strike march just a few weeks ago, and I was really proud of these high school students who helped to organize this march. There was hundreds of people there, and all they were asking for from the county government, which is something that I will do, is pass a climate action plan. Just a plan. Let's put a plan in place for how we can do things like start to measure and benchmark our greenhouse gas emissions. How are we going to, we should have a better plan in place for, you know, solid waste disposal. What are we doing for on all these issues? How are we making our buildings more efficient? You know, and all they're looking for is a plan and bring people together. And it's not the way the county does it. I'm not talking about a plan created by department heads and people who just answer directly to the county executive. I'm talking about a community-driven plan. We bring in experts who are from our region. Bring in experts. Bring in students. Bring in the community to develop this plan on what we should be doing as a county government and how we can be doing a better job. And that just doesn't exist right now. I know the Democratic legislators tried to introduce a referral to create a climate action plan, and I think to create a climate action board, which is something that I would want to do, and it was rejected. It wasn't acted on.
If you do that, do you expect it to come with higher costs? And if so, where's the money come from?
Well, there are actually resources that are available that are out there that we're not collecting. There's resources, there's grants that are available through New York State and the federal government. There's grants that are out there. There's foundation support for a lot of things that we would want to do. We're just not, because the county hasn't prioritized this, we're just not going after those revenue sources. So there are resources out there available. There's other counties that are collecting those resources. We're just not having prioritized that here in Monroe.
I think you had opposed a plastic bag tax. Do you still?
Yeah. My position on that has not changed. I think that it was the right thing to do was to eliminate plastic bags. I think that was the right thing to do. I just don't think placing another tax on the community in that way is the right thing to do right now when it comes to the paper bags.
Steven wants to know, do you support a countywide school district in the future?
No, I think that the issue of school reform and what we need to do with the Rochester City School District is a couple things. First of all, I like the mayor's approach to this community school model, where we start bringing resources into the schools. Because at the end of the day, one of the largest challenges facing the success or that's challenging the success of the Rochester City School District is poverty. And children not living in a safe and stable home, without access to food, and the problems, you know, it will clearly impact their ability to learn and succeed. One of Monroe County's main missions is to provide social service programs, and so I think that we should have a complete system redesign to design our programs instead of instead of being designed to keep people out, we should design our programs to lift people up and integrate them in a way where we can really start to figure out how we lift people out of poverty and give people opportunity. And I think that if you start there and you meet people where they are, people are in their schools, they're in the neighborhood schools, and if you can bring those programs and services into the schools, integrate it with the city school district, but also with all the other community support that's out there. There's a lot of nonprofits and foundations that are working on poverty in our community, but they're not coordinated. And I think that's the job that the county can do a much better leadership position on. We should be leading that effort here. And I think that we're just not doing that in an effective way. And the result is in the numbers.
Janice wants to know, I would like to know Adam's thoughts about budget and oversight for the zoo and parks, the zoo with regard to animal welfare. Now, of course, we lost an elephant this week, 37-year-old elephant at the zoo, and that's always a hard story to hear. I'm curious to know if you look at the way the zoo has handled parks and think, you know, if and when I'm in charge, it's going to be different.
Well, I would say this. I think the zoo is a treasure in our community and clearly needed investments to be made. I think it was falling behind, obviously, where other zoos were across the country. To be honest with you, Evan, I want to say two things. One is my heart and thoughts do go out to the staff at the zoo right now. I know that that was a very tough thing to go through this week and endure with the loss of the elephant. I myself have a friend who works over at the zoo, and she was obviously very impacted. And I know the other elephants were as well that evening. But I would, to be honest, I do want to tell you, I'm troubled by the fact that it does seem to be a lot of announcements coming out of the zoo about animal welfare issues. And so I would want to take a look at that if I'm elected. Because obviously we want the best for the animals that live at the zoo. And then we also want a great zoo environment for the visitors who are coming. I mean, as a parent who's raising kids in our community, what's going to help keep families here and provide, you know, those quality of life issues one of those pieces is a vibrant zoo.
All right. Just want to update an issue that has been, it was more prominent during the primary season, but there's some news, and I'm going to read from Spectrum News here regarding driver's licenses for undocumented immigrants. A bill introduced by the top Republican in the state Senate would provide safeguards to state Department of Motor Vehicle workers who do not comply with a new law that allows undocumented immigrants to apply for driver's licenses in New York. The proposal from Senate Majority Leader John Flanagan comes as the new law is set to take effect in December. Several county clerks who oversee and administer local motor vehicle offices have filed lawsuits in federal court to overturn the measure. You said back in the summer you did not support the green light law, the change here, but you also, if I'm remembering correctly, did not support essentially a stand against it if it were to pass. In other words, if it passes, you're willing to comply with the law, but you didn't want to see it pass. Is that a fair summation? Where are you at on this?
Yeah. What I said was that, yes, I was opposed to the law when it was in front of the legislature. But what I also said is that my job as a county clerk is to follow the law. And so, you know, my expectation is that we would follow the law if it takes effect in a couple months from now.
Which it is in December, right?
It is. It's December 14th is my understanding. And so I said we would follow the law, and I would expect that the employees who I work with every day, some of the hardest working men and women that I know at the DMVs, that they would follow the law as well. And I know it's being challenged in court right now, so we're still waiting to see what happens with those court challenges. But I think there's been an awful lot of politics, though, that's being played with this issue instead of really trying to figure out what it is. You know, I raised concerns, and I've continued to raise concerns about what the documents will look like that people will present to us to prove their identity. And so we're still waiting to see what that will look like from New York State and what the verification process will be. But I think, you know, the issue of the lawsuits that have been filed and everything else, I just, you know, we have an issue in Monroe County where we don't have enough resources to make a real impact in early intervention services. We don't have enough resources to really impact child protective services in a meaningful way. We don't have enough resources to fund our commitments for health care benefits for our sheriff retirees who put their lives on the line to serve this community. But somehow we have enough money to file a lawsuit that several other counties in New York State have filed, and that against a law that there's, I think, a dozen states across the country are already following. And so I just think it's a misplaced placement of the resources that we have.
Fair enough. But if you're elected county executive, are you going to lobby on this issue for another change in the law? Is this going to be a priority for you?
Well, we're going to have to see what happens with the court cases. I assume the courts are going to rule on something between now and December 14th. So we don't know where that's going to be. So we'll take a look at what the courts do and what the law looks like on the 14th.
Kevin in Brighton on the phone next with Adam Bellow. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, hi. I'm calling. I have a question about food stamps and SSI.
Sure. Hi,
Kevin. Hi. I have autistic children, and they were diagnosed like about 16 or 17 years ago, and they're still not able to function normally. We were getting food stamps, along with their SSI, but the county executive at the time changed the rules so that SSI income was counted towards determining the food stamp benefits, and because of that change, we lost a lot of food stamps that caused us a lot of difficulty. So I'm wondering, if you're elected county executive, would you reverse that?
Okay. Well, thank you for that question, Kevin. That's something that I would absolutely take a look at. I think that I'm not familiar with the rule change, but I will go take a look at that, Kevin, because I'll say this. I think that for us to be successful, there's two things that families need support with, and you just identified one of them because you're facing that. It's housing and it's access to food. We should be doing everything that we can as a county to help families and individuals be able to lift themselves up and be able to be sustainable and be able to access these programs, not design these programs to keep people out. So I'll absolutely take a look at this for you, Kevin.
Kevin, thanks for the phone call. Robert in Fairport is next. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Mr. Bellow mentioned the possibility of a forensic audit for county finances if elected. If anyone needs a forensic audit, it's the Rochester City School District. What can the county executive do to hold county taxpayers harmless when the RCSD decides to spend $30 million it doesn't have? And can he undo the Moore and Ryan Act of 1985, which gave the city of Rochester a disproportionate share of sales tax revenue relative to the county?
Thank you, Robert. I think what I would do differently is this. I'm actually proud that I was one of the first public officials here in Rochester to call for fiscal oversight over the school district last month when this was announced that there was a huge budget shortfall at the end of last year. I think there needs to be accountability, and I'm glad that the New York State Comptroller is here auditing those finances to find out and get to the bottom of what happened, because the last thing we would want to see as the result of a fiscal decision made by adults is a negative impact on the children in terms of budget cuts and things like that for programs, services, and educators that they need to be successful. I think the county's role, though, when it comes to the school district and the city school district in helping the school district succeed and the children succeed is in the delivery of the programs that we offer citizens and families in the city of Rochester. We don't design our programs in an integrated way to help lift families up. They're designed to keep people out. I mean, that's something that you just heard the previous caller, Kevin, talking about, rules changes that then prevented him from receiving food help for his children and his family. That's how these programs are designed. And I think that what we should be doing is figuring out how do we link the programs, housing, food, child care subsidies, which is a big issue here in our community. How do you link all those programs together in a way that are designed so that 5 or 10 years from now, a family who accesses those programs and is in the system can lift themselves out and be successful? We don't think that way. Instead, we think about them as individual programs and silos, and they're really not leveraged against what other people are doing. So I think we could do a far better way approach in that space where it comes to working with families. And I think that's how we have a better impact on the school district.
Well, on this program last week, representatives from a local children's advocacy organizations told us that the county is not releasing information about the progress of the 8-point plan that the DeNulfo administration enacted to address issues with CPS. What's your position on that plan, and what do you know about it?
Well, I think I'll tell you what I know about it. The Child Protective Services needs help in Monroe County, and I think there's another example. You know, you can announce an eight-point plan and have one, but it doesn't do any good unless you enact the 8 points that are in your plan. And I meet with social workers and CPS workers all the time who tell me their caseload sizes are far too high. There's still way too many vacancies in that department. You just go back and look at the news a couple months ago, and they're talking about that caseload sizes here were 50% higher than what the state recommended. And I think that that's what happens when you go through 10 or 20 years of devaluing your employees and making it so that it's difficult to work for Monroe County. And these are difficult jobs. I mean, the men and women who go into CPS and go into that field come across some of the most horrific situations that you could imagine. And it's a very stressful job, and they work incredibly hard. And when they have to fight tooth and nail for a contract every year, you know, and when you have to, and when they see their pays being relatively stagnant while political appointees are getting what they want and they're getting pay raises year after year and their pay scales are going up, that's a problem.
So hire more, pay more.
So we need to pay our social workers more, and we need to fill the positions that we promised people we would fill.
What's the budget number? How much is it going to cost?
Well, I think they're already in the budget, these positions. They're not filling them. They're not filling them. And I think the problem is that they announced that they're going to create all these positions. That's part of what the 8-point plan was. But then they don't fill, you know, they don't fill the jobs. They also promise pay increases.
But it's not like the money is sitting in an excess fund somewhere. I mean, you got to take the money out of something else or get it from something else. Right?
Well, no, it was budgeted this year. It was part
and
of
it. Just unspent?
Well, that's why we need an audit. I don't know. I can't tell why they're not hiring and finishing the positions. Let's say right now
the county is right on the razor's edge. There's not money sitting in a pot for this. You want to hire more and pay them more, which people understand. Where are you going to cut from, or where are you going to get that money from?
Well, Evan, I think it's in the budget. That's why there's a problem here, because when the county announced their 8-point plan, right, that was part of a budget process, and it actually received a lot of praise from people.
So your view is the money's already there?
It should be.
If it's not there, are you going to create it?
Yes, because that's what part of this audit has to be, because we keep being told one thing, but then the condition is something else.
Okay, and given the fact that you think that the county executive and her administration exaggerates the mandates and how constricted the county is with its budget, do you view places where the county could spend less and effectively say, hey, we put this money here, we could take this out and put it over here?
Well, you know, I'll give you an example, a couple examples. It's even in the way that they treat their employees. This county, I think, spends an awful lot of money fighting its employees instead of working with them. And, you know, that's through legal services and things like that when it comes to negotiating contracts and working with its employees and day in and day out. I mean, we also have an issue in this county about who gets taken care of before other people. You know, I went back and looked at the pay scales. Someone hired in the social worker field. So let's talk about CPS workers. Someone hired under the most recent contract who gets to a step D will make less money than someone at the step D in 2008. Okay, so that pay just it did not work, that salary schedule. But in the same period of time, the M&P class employee, the management professionals who are largely appointees, their pay scale went up 15%. Over that same time period. And so I think it's a choice. Incredibly unfair. And I think it's a choice. And it goes into, you know, helping people because of who they are and who they know. And it doesn't work for everybody. I don't think that the people at the top should get their raises and should get fed until the troops are. And I think the problem is we have an awful lot of men and women who are working incredibly hard out there on the street trying to impact things like CPS, trying to impact early intervention services, trying to protect us. They're working on roads and bridges. They're doing all this work. They're sheriff deputies. They're working over at the airport fire department. And they're working incredibly hard, and they're not treated as partners in the mission of impacting this community. They're treated as liabilities, and I think I view that a little bit differently. I think they should be partners in this.
A couple more quick questions. Andrew wants clarification on county schools. Is it that you don't think it's a good idea, or that you think it's a good idea but not politically feasible?
Well, I don't think that's the solution right now. I just don't think that's right. Yeah.
All right. That's simple.
I like the community schools model, and I think that the counties should put its focus right now in addressing poverty and in working to make our social service programs more efficient for people.
When's the last time you voted for a Republican?
Evan, I don't know that I have voted for a Republican.
In your life?
In a long time. No, I can't. I don't remember the last time I voted for a Republican.
No one's listening. You're not going to be in trouble with the party.
No, I don't know the last time I voted for a Republican. I've been involved in politics and in local politics for a very long time, and I know most of the candidates who are running for office every year, and I actually get to meet them and know them and feel comfortable with them, and I feel very comfortable with the Democratic Party and the people I've been voting for over the years. Yeah.
Okay, so in this particular election cycle, county government, if you're elected, you still have to work with the legislature.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How confident are you that your party is going to flip things around?
Well, I feel very good about where we are. We have county legislature candidates running across the county who are doing very well. I think we have real opportunity to flip control of the county legislature. And I think that's important because we need to have a functioning county legislature again. And I don't think we have that right now. They like to brag about the bipartisan nature of the county of the bills that get passed or the referrals that are passed. Well, the problem is when you don't allow Democrats to introduce referrals to be voted on, that's what happens. I mean, it runs very much like you see coming out of Washington, where, you know, things just don't even get votes anymore. And I think that that's unfortunate. And I think we need to flip the legislature so that we can start having a real conversation about how to move the needle on these. But I think we also have to put politics behind us now. We got to stop with the politics. We have to figure out how to work with each other. We might not vote for each other, but we all have the same mission and the same goal. We have to impact these challenges, the economic challenges, the opioid crisis, which we didn't have a chance to talk about, but CPS, early intervention. We have to figure out how we're going to impact things. It just can't be about, you're a different party, let's not deal with you.
In our last 45 seconds, then, and you're right, a lot we hit, but a lot we didn't. Give me your brief mindset on how you can attack opioids differently.
I think that the opioid epidemic requires a true community impact. This is one of the largest public health crises that certainly has been in my lifetime. And I think that we are not designed in a way to help people right now, to lift them that are ready to go into recovery to recover. I don't think any individual who shows up in a hospital, an emergency room, an urgent care center, a medical facility in Monroe County who's ready for help and wants to recover, nobody should go back on the street until an appointment is made at a rehabilitation facility, the prescription has been written for them, and they have mental health services available to them. There's no reason anybody should have to leave until those things are made available.
Would you keep Dr. Mike Mendoza as County Health Commissioner?
Well, I think we're going to, I don't know. We have to have that conversation after. But what I would tell you is this, is I'm glad he followed my lead when a report came out and said one of the things we're missing here is collaboration. And I think that bringing those services to our medical centers, which I think he agrees with, is important.
I'm glad you were here. And
thank you, Evan. I appreciate it.
I do appreciate your time. And again, Cheryl Donolfo, the county executive, Adam's opponent, has been invited and ultimately declined and says she will choose not to come on this program before the election. We really did our best to schedule that. Adam Bello, real quick, the website for people to learn more?
You can see us on the website, www.adambello2019.com. We're also on Facebook and Twitter.
Thank you very much.
Right,
our
thanks
to Don, who is volunteering. Happy birthday to intern Emma Ray. Megan Mack producing and engineering. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you tomorrow.